Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Recovery Radio broadcast recorded live at the Latah Recovery Community Center in downtown Moscow. At the LRCC, we work with people to enter and engage in recovery from addictions and behavioral health disorders through peer-to-peer interaction and evidence-based practices to promote a healthy community. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah Recovery Community Center, which is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community information about addiction and behavioral health disorders and to make our community aware of the recovery resources available from the Latah Recovery Community Center. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for those struggling with addiction and behavioral health disorders. And we're gonna jump into the October calendar, which just hit the page. And first off, we have Harm Reduction Safe Syringe Exchange and Supplies. That happens weekdays by appointment, so call ahead. Recovery Coaching Peer Support online by phone, and you can call and schedule an appointment. That's every day and by appointment weekdays. Vandal Recovery at the Center, formerly known as the Campus Christian Center on the U of I campus, is weekdays from 8:30 till 4:30. Alcoholics Anonymous, live and on Zoom, is every day at noon, Monday through Sunday. Narcotics Anonymous happens every day at 7 p.m. Positive Affirmations, live and on Zoom, happens Mondays from 2 to 3. Downtown Trick or Treat, wear a costume. That's going to happen on Monday, the 31st, Halloween, woohoo, from 3 to 6 p.m. Come on down to the Recovery Center and bring your kids and dress up in a costume. It'll be fun. AA Monday Men's Meeting happens on Mondays from 5:30 till 6:30. Oscar Mike, Vets Coffee and Conversation happens Mondays from 6:30 to 7:30. AA Women's Meeting is live at St. Mark's Episcopal Church across from the library and is available through our Zoom link on our calendar. And that's Mondays at 7:30. Recovery Peer Volunteer Meeting happens last Monday of every month at 6 p.m. Grief Group meets the first and third Tuesday of the month at 5:30. The Reentry Support Group with Miranda meets Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. The LRCC Board Meeting happens on the second Tuesday of every month, and this month it'll be Tuesday, October 11th. Starts at 3:45 p.m. and the public is invited to attend. The Events Committee meets Wednesdays at 2 o'clock. New Volunteer Orientation is Wednesdays at 3. Overeaters Anonymous meets Wednesdays at 5:15. Recovery Radio, you're listening to it now, is Thursdays about 1:15. The North Idaho AIDS Coalition Free Hepatitis C and HIV Testing will be on Thursday, October 20th from 12 to 2. That's at no cost to you and is a requirement to be in the Safe Syringe Exchange program. Movie and Game Night is Thursdays from 5 to 8. The intern meeting for our interns at LRC is Fridays at 2. All Recovery Meeting live and on Zoom is Fridays from 5 to 5:45. And Al-Anon live and on Zoom is Fridays at 8 p.m. Also, Alcoholics Anonymous Sunday morning group, which meets at the Campus Christian Center, or the Center as they're calling it now. That's Sundays at 9:30 a.m. And again, you can link to that meeting through Zoom from the LRCC calendar. And coming up, I want you to mark your calendars for our Soups On fundraiser. It's a soup tasting event, and it'll be on November 2nd from 11 till 2 at the 1912 Center on 3rd Street. Tickets are $20 and are available at the front desk. at 531 South Main Street, the Recovery Center. And if you can't afford $20, we do have sponsored tickets available. So mark your calendars for that. November 2nd from 11 to 2. It's a great way to have lunch, meet other like-minded members of the community, talk about recovery, ask questions of staff, and it's a great time. We've been doing it for several years now, and it's really been wonderful. So come on down and check that out. And that's it for the calendar. Now, I am Radio Johnny, and I am a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And week before last, I did a reading from the book Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the basic text for Alcoholics Anonymous, often referred to as the Big Book or the Blue Book. And I got some pretty good feedback on that. Some people wanting to hear more. I don't know if it's my dulcimer tones as I read, or most likely it's just the message that is carried in the book. So I decided, I'm going to do this periodically, read a chapter or so, and maybe give a little bit of feedback as far as how that chapter has affected me and my recovery journey. Of course, everyone's recovery journey is different, and the effects are of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous are as varied as there are snowflakes. So keep in mind, this is only my opinion or my perspective on what the program has done for me. So last time I read the opening chapter, which was Bill's story, and it was the story of Bill W., one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, and how he basically discovered the program and decided to start sharing it with other alcoholics like himself, considered the hopeless variety, which is how I envision myself. But I've overcome the drink problem at this point, and it's through this program. So now we're going to move on to chapter 2, which is titled There Is a Solution. And here we go. We of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who would normally not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like passengers of a great liner in the moment after rescue from shipwreck, where camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we were now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. An illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it is an illness, involve those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness, for with it there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives, and parents. Anyone can increase the list. We hope this volume will inform and comfort those who are, or who may be affected. There are many. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. But the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. That the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about, that his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer, that he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful, that there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. None of us makes a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our prospective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in that sort of effort which we are going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. If we keep on the way we are going, there is little doubt that much good will result, but the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us who live in large cities are overcome by the reflection that close by, hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many could recover if they had the opportunity we have enjoyed. How then shall we present that which has been so freely given us? We have concluded to publish an anonymous volume setting forth the problem as we see it. We shall bring to the task our combined experience and knowledge. This should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. Of necessity, there will have to be discussions of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. We are aware that these matters are, from their very nature, controversial. Nothing would please us so much as to write a book which would contain no bias for contention or argument. We shall do our utmost to achieve that ideal. Most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. You may already have asked yourself, why is it that all of us become so very ill from drinking? Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? This is the purpose of this book, to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we have done. Before going into detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some of the points as we see them. How many times have people said to us, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl, I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. Now these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. We see that these expectations refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. Moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it. They can take it or leave it alone. Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor, becomes imperative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Here's the fellow who has been puzzling you, especially in his lack of control. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He's a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He is always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet let him drink for a day and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. He is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor, but in that respect, he is incredibly dishonest and selfish. He often possesses special abilities, skills, and aptitudes, and has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook for his family and himself. Then he pulls the structure down on his head by a senseless series of sprees. He is the fellow who goes to bed so intoxicated he ought to sleep the clock around. Yet early the next morning, he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. If he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over the house to be certain no one gets his entire supply away from him to throw down the wastepipe. As matters grow worse, he begins to use a combination of high-powered sedative and liquor to quiet his nerves so he can go to work. Then comes the day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. Perhaps he goes to a doctor who gives him morphine or some sedative with which to taper off. Then he begins to appear at the hospitals and sanitariums. This by no means is a comprehensive picture of the true alcoholic, as our behavior patterns vary, but this description should identify him roughly. Why does he behave like this? If hundreds of experiences have shown him that one drink means another debacle with all its attendant suffering and humiliation, why is it he takes that one drink? Why can't he stay on the water wagon? What has become of the common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays with respect to other matters? Perhaps there will never be a full answer to these questions. Opinions vary considerably as to why the alcoholic reacts differently from normal people. We are not sure why, once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. We cannot answer the riddle. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol whatever into his system, something happens, both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of a man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so they can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of the alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Once in a while, he may tell the truth, And the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. Some drinkers have excuses, which they are satisfied with part of the time, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. There is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game, but they often suspect they are down for the count. How true this is, few realize. In a vague way, their families and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal, but everybody hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will rouse himself from his lethargy and assert his power of will. The tragic truth is that if a man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons, yes, obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable, at certain times, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, "Won't burn me this time, so here's how," or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us begun to drink in this nonchalant way, and after the third or fourth pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, "For God's sakes, how did I ever get started again?" Only to have that thought supplanted by the, "Well, I'll stop with the sixth drink," or "What's the use anyhow?" When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid, and unless locked up, he may die or go permanently insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history, but for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop, but cannot. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked with others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have a deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. If you are seriously alcoholic, as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. This we did because we wanted to, and were willing to make the effort. A certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and a high character. For years, he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. Then he had gone to Europe, placing himself in the care of a celebrated physician, the psychiatrist Dr. Jung, who prescribed for him through experience. Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. Above all, he believed he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. Nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fall. So he returned to this doctor, whom he admired, and asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems, yet he had no control whatever over alcohol. Why was this? He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. He could never again regain his position in society, and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was the great physician's opinion. But this man still lives and is a free man. He does not need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on this earth where other free men may go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. Some of our alcoholic readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Let us tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with the doctor. The doctor said, "You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never seen one single case recover where the state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you." Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed behind him with a clang. He said to the doctor, "Is there no exception?" "Yes," replied the doctor, "there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitude, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. In fact, I have been trying to produce some such emotional rearrangements within you. With many individuals, the methods which I have employed are successful, but I have never been successful with an alcoholic of your description." Upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that, after all, he was a good church member. This hope, however, was destroyed by the doctor's telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. Here was the terrible dilemma in which our friend found himself when he had the extraordinary experience, which, as we have already told you, made him a free man. We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or, if you prefer, a design for living that really works. The distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book Varieties of Religious Experience, indicates a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. Those having religious affiliations will find there is nothing disturbing to their beliefs or ceremonies. There is no friction among us over such matters. We think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. This should be an entirely personal affair, which each one dictates for himself in the light of past associations or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such memberships. In the following chapter, there appears an explanation of alcoholism, as we understand it, then a chapter addressed to the agnostic. Many who were once in this class are now among our members. Surprisingly enough, we find such convictions no great obstacle to a spiritual experience. Further on, clear-cut directions are given, showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Those give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women, desperately in need, will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by full disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, "Yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing." Okay. So that's the end of chapter one, or chapter two, excuse me. There is a solution. And it moves on there to the story about more about alcoholism, and we'll get to that in a future time. But I want to spend a little time here talking about this process of discovery or understanding exactly what alcoholism is to me, and how I came to believe and understand what I needed to do to try and solve this problem. I was, like most typical, men growing up in the 60s and 70s, alcohol was everywhere, along with other substances. But, alcohol was pretty easily available, and the first time I drank, I really enjoyed the feeling it gave me. I felt funny. I felt uninhibited. I was able to, make my friends laugh and really enjoyed and had a good time. And I believe now, looking in retrospect, that once I had that feeling, once I got that alcohol in myself, I just wanted more. Not necessarily to drink, when I was young, I think I could drink three beers before I get sick. So, not a real huge, volume of alcohol there. But I knew I wanted to get drunk again. And that feeling invaded every part of my life. Going to high school, all I could think about was the weekend, Friday night. Where could we get some beer? Where could we get some wine? Could we get some alcohol and then go into, the dance at the high school and be uninhibited and talk to girls and, all those things that my general nature would keep me from doing, being slightly shy. Alcohol allowed me to be outgoing and quite verbose. And I just wanted that feeling all the time. And, early on for many years, I was able to say, okay, well, it's the weekend. I can, have a few drinks with friends and have a good time. We can go out fishing or duck hunting or whatever and drink some brandy to stay warm and have a little buzz, and that was all great, and that was all fine. Nobody got hurt, for the most part. Nobody got shot, at any rate. But we all had this, just common camaraderie that we really enjoyed, and that was great. But then, in time,
I worked in an industry where it was really common to go out for lunch and have a few drinks at lunch, or a couple of drinks, a few for me. Then the idea of having a little bracer in the morning, you know, before work, just kind of loosen up, that seemed okay too. And there wasn't much pushback to it, at least not in, you know, the industry I was in. But at a certain point, I didn't feel like I had to be cautious or temperate about my drinking. You know, I could have a few shots in the morning. I could, have several drinks at lunch. And after work, I could go out with the rest of the guys and, sit in the bar for a couple hours and have a few more. And then as time went by, it became necessary to drink. You know, I'd gotten to that point where they talked about in this chapter where I had lost all control. I wasn't able to stop when I wanted to. I mean, I wasn't able to not drink if I didn't want to. I literally had to drink, because if I didn't drink, I would get ill, and I knew that. And I created so much havoc around me, like it said in the text there, that the only way I could see to make myself feel better about any of it, or just to ignore it, was to drink more. And then you get into the concept of the dog chasing its tail, you know? You never catch it. It's just constantly doing the same thing over and over again. And like it says further on in the book, you know, it's a never-ending cycle that you just can't break, at least not by, you know, human power. I tried going to church. It didn't seem to help. I didn't find an answer there. It wasn't until I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and started listening to the people in there, and I found out, wow, there's a lot of people here who drank just like me, and look at them all laughing and joking and drinking coffee, and they're having a good time. And I almost got angry. It's like, don't they know how sick I am? You know, these people just aren't taking this seriously, or at least that was my initial thought. But as time went by and I kept going back to these meetings, I realized that they were like it described in the book. They were free. They were free of the problem of alcohol, and they were free to laugh about their history and work on making their lives better and bettering the lives of the people around them. I remember at the end of that first meeting, of course, I came in, sat way in the back of the room, hoping nobody would notice me. And as the meeting closed up, I think they closed with the Serenity Prayer, maybe the Lord's Prayer, I don't remember. What I do remember was I was surrounded by about five or six men who wanted to know, you know, all about me. How was I? Why I was there? You know, did I want to stop drinking? Did I have a big book? Did I want some of the pamphlets to figure out if I really was an alcoholic? And it gave me hope. It gave me hope that maybe there was something there that could help me beat this alcohol problem. I wasn't initially convinced, but like I said, I had a little, like it says in the previous reading, it seemed a slim reed, but it was something to hang on to. And so I did. You know, I got to know some of these men. I did what they suggested. I got a sponsor, which is basically a guide, someone who's been through the 12 steps before and was able to go through it with me so I could take full advantage of the program and learn this, like it said again in the reading, this simple kit of spiritual tools. And I was initially a little bit worried about all this God nonsense, because God had not worked out well for me. I had a religious upbringing in actually a Lutheran church. Not to down them, but, you know, it was the type of preaching I heard was fire and brimstone, and, you know, you're going to burn if you're the way you are. And it turns out the way I was going to burn. At least that was my belief. So I wanted to get as far away from that as I can. I could not figure out why God was always so angry with me for the things I did. So when I started seeing all these references to God and spiritual experience, I didn't think this would work for me. Not until somebody explained to me that, you know, it's a God of your conception. You know, what would God look like in your mind? And pursue it based on that. And I call it a God of my non-understanding because I can't exactly put my finger on what it is or who it is. It's not a man who lives in the cloud with a long flowing white beard. It's just that extra strength I can tap into and ask for help when I need it. And it took a long time, but you know, I became willing to believe that my sponsor had a power greater than himself. And he said, hey, you know, two of us working together is better than one, right? And I'm like, yeah, well, that's true. So, you know, for a while, my higher power was the two of us, and that worked. And it's expanded since then, but I'll talk about that all a bunch later. So anyway, we're about at the end of the time now, and we'll come back and work in this book some more. Evidently, people enjoy it. I don't know what's wrong with you, but okay. And of course, you know, you can always go to an AA meeting. There's lots of open meetings if you're not sure you're an alcoholic or if you just want to stop drinking. Just go to district22aa.org, and that's the local AA district. And you can find a schedule of meetings there and go check one out and see what it's all about. You know, even if you don't think you have an alcohol problem, but you know somebody that does, maybe you can make some connections there that could help that situation. So anyway, we're at the end of it now. So thank everybody for listening. And, you know, you can always email us at latarecoverycenter@gmail.com and just put Recovery Radio in the subject line there, and they'll forward that information on to me. If you have any questions or concerns, or you know, want to hear more about this, that, or the other, or maybe you're a recovered alcoholic and you want to tell your story, be happy to give you airtime and let you talk about it. So with that, I'm going to close with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol or other drugs or behavioral health, you do. Can depend on.